Give a warm welcome for Keith D. from Yorba Linda, California.
Hello, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Keith. Most important thing that I can say to you is I've not taken a drink of alcohol or used any kind of narcotic since May 11, 1976. And for that, I'm basically grateful. It's really in a good place this evening. I know if you're an alcoholic and you're in an AA meeting, the world is probably a safer place. But for me, I've got to see people that I haven't seen in many years, people that really touched my life and were a part of my sobriety, memories, good memories. That's one of the things about being sober and staying sober. You get a few things back for short periods of time, like your sex life. They're not memories anymore. Really happens. My wife and I have been married. We've been married 50 years. We've been together longer than that, and we still have sex at least 3 to 4 times a month. That's not a visual. That's just fact. I went to see the doctor the other day for my checkup, and he said, you don't have anything wrong with you new other than what you've always had. And I said, I'd like to get a Viagra about this big and an ice pick so I could chip off different sizes of pieces as I needed them. The nurses thought that was funny. The nurses, look at that old man. He wants a giant Viagra. What's the matter with him? He's old. Yeah. My wife sends her love. She's in Las Vegas. We have a home in Las Vegas and one in Yorba Linda, California, home of the dead Dick. It's where Nixon's buried. Land of gracious living. My beautiful wife sent me texted me a picture today, and she got a diamond stud in her nose. She's 67 years old, and she's got... Yeah. I mean, hey, that's what's going on now. I called my daughter this morning. She lives in Milan, Italy. She's been over there for over 20 years. She went over there as a model 25 years ago, and and she was a successful model and stayed over there and met a young Italian man, and they went together and eventually got married. He's a beautiful, beautiful young Italian man. Old Italian family, very traditional, very old Italian, Bertolotto. They're very wealthy. She's never wired me for money since she met him. That's a keeper, baby. I don't care what. First time he came over to California, he came over from Italy to California, and he can't speak much English, and I don't speak Italian that well, but we're standing in my kitchen. I got a Rolex watch on that. I just had a buddy of mine got two of them, and he didn't need both of them, so he gave me a deal on it, so I was wearing it. And my future son-in-law's got a little backpack on, and he talks to my daughter, and they talk, and he points at my watch. What? He said, he wants to know how much you want. So I figured, well, double my money. And I told him, and he pulled American dollars right out of that little pack and paid me. He bought my watch right off my arm. So I'm never going to have a problem with him. They have houses all over Italy. They got a castle over there where Clooney has his thing in that lake, and they got a villa, and they got old family. All this stuff's old money, but he's from that family. And I go over and visit him. Once a year, I go over, and I see Mama and Papa Bertolotto, and I get a little audience with them, and I say, thank you for loving my daughter as if she were your own. And they say, don't worry. And then I leave. I don't want to screw it up. I leave. So one summer, my wife and I went over, and they're in Alasso, which is just below, it's the Italian Riviera, and then the Monte Carlo is right, you can see it there. So it's an Italian beach, and they have a place there. And so I told my daughter, I said, Mom and I are coming over while you're at the beach. She said, okay. And one of the guys I sponsor is really good with, you know, tickets. He was sitting right there, and he said, I can get you some real cheap right now. And I told her, I said, I can get them right now. And so, click, buy them. And I bought them. And I said, Mom and I are coming. It was August or something. So she called her mother up the next day. She said, you know that Dad bought tickets for you and him to come over here to the beach? And Mom said, yeah, it's all excited, isn't it? Great. And Simone, her name is Simone, she said, Mom, I mean, she's got 34 years in Al-Anon, 34 years in Al-Anon. She says, Mom, Dad's got all these tattoos, and the people on the beach don't have tattoos. What are we going to do? And Mom said, I think you just had a slip. Dad's dead. The people on a beach are just going to have to be the people. I mean, they wear those Speedos and all that stuff. Come on. My tattoos are nothing. But she didn't want to be embarrassed. So Mom says, okay, cool. So she goes down to Harley dealer and she buys three of those little T-shirts that you put them on. They look like tattoos. She got both of the granddaughters those shirts with, and she got her one. And so we go over there and we go in their house. And we're going to the beach. And by then, Simone had worked through it. And then the grandkids come out and they got their T-shirts on. It looks like, some freak family with you. There's this old man tattooed. Mom's got her she's 65 and got her tattoos on. And the kids look like we had late in life children or something. We're going to be in the National Enquirer, man. We went to the beach and all these Italian people. I mean, my son-in-law has so much clout, nobody smarts off. They call me the ugly American. We go over there, and all these Italian, old, rich Italian people are, pss, 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 pss. And I said, what are they doing? She said, they're looking at your tattoos. It's like looking at a cartoon book, you know, a comic book. They're reading all this stuff on you. They think it's great, you know. No big deal. No big deal. We had a great time. And I sat in my son-in-law's house for 10 days. I stayed there with my daughter and my two granddaughters. And I watched my son-in-law. He's not an alcoholic. He's not an addict. He inherited the family business. He's a hard, hard worker. He's a great family man. And I watched my son-in-law, how he treated his wife, how he treated his two daughters. It was absolutely beautiful. What more could I want for my daughter than to be happy? What more could I want? I believe just maybe, if what I'm doing here tonight, just maybe the chain is broken. What if? Maybe the chain is broken. I'm a five-generation alcoholic at least, and maybe the chain is broken. My daughter, I got home, our daughter said, Dad, we didn't get to spend any time together. And I said, you know what? I got to watch your husband and how he treats you and how he treats his children for 10 days. And I don't have to worry. I know you'll be taken care of and you'll be treated right, but he's a strong man and what he believes in, he's very strong about it. What a great thing. And my daughter cried and said, Dad, I love you. I'm so grateful you saw that. That's good stuff, man. I don't come here to bring you some story about trials and tribulations and I got sober and I went down the toilet. I'm depressed all the time, have anxiety. Nah, man, I come here to turn it on. I didn't come here to turn it off. I come here to live. I come here to get a piece of life. I did. I didn't come here. I was tore up. I was tore up. I had nothing, nothing. And I was sick, sick, sick. And I'd been in and out and in and out and in and out. And finally, you know, I was in a meeting the other night, and there was four newcomers, and they talked about how grateful they were and are for that desire to stay sober. That moment, you know, what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like today in a general way. And what happened was that I had a moment when I wanted to get sober more than I wanted to drink or use. A moment in time. And I grabbed it. And I held on to it. And it's a very fragile thing. And I still have it today. I'm excited about sobriety. I love being sober. I've had my problems. I've gone through all kinds of things in sobriety. I probably would have gone through those things had I not ever taken a drink. But I survived. I'm a survivor. I'm a survivor. I'm a survivor. I've survived 22 years of drinking and 34 years of AA. Yeah! Gossip and stagnation and character assassination and rumors in AA. Man, it's great, isn't it? You'd think we was in a church if we didn't have all that judgment and character assassination. And yeah, that's living. I wouldn't know nothing if I didn't judge you. I wouldn't even know you. Well, I took my first drink at a very early age, and I liked it. It did exactly what it's supposed to do. Exactly. And I didn't stay drunk from that age until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was 36 years old when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been drinking and using for 25 years. And I've gone through families, I've gone through jobs, careers. But the most important thing that happened to me in that time was I sold my soul. I literally sold my soul to the devil. I had no values. I used narcotics. And the most important thing I can tell you about that with me was that as I used narcotics with alcohol, I became much, much more evil. The narcotics, the combination, I became so evil that I didn't believe I could come back from that. I literally believed that I was so far gone that I could never come back. And I went to church and got baptized, sprinkled and dipped, you know, the whole thing. I was a joiner. I was prospecting in the Hells Angels at the same time I was doing my third degree proficiency in the Masonic Lodge. That's a dilemma. You got to be sure what door you go through on that one, I'll tell you. I was confused. But I was running, man, I was running. It was like the guy with all the sticks and the plates, man, I was doing. I did a lot of speed. That's like going 190 miles an hour with your feet nailed to the floor, you know? Bam! Drink that whiskey and get it on. Get drunk and be somebody. Yeah. If you're waiting on me, you're backing up, slick. Yeah. Yeah. Periodically, there was no one to talk to. It's great when you're ahead of the pack and then they turn and you don't know it and all of a sudden you're alone. Oh, well, just start over. I was in the penitentiary and I was doing my four-step. I looked back on my life and I saw, you know, I've been hanging around these honky-tonks. I've been with these wild, wild women and fast cars and crazy guys and I need to get away from them. And so I got out. I got $100 in a new suit, got a jug of whiskey, got on a train. I called my two very best friends, Oily and Goose, and I told them, I'll be at the train station, Amarillo, Texas, at midnight. I drank that and thought about that, and I drank that and thought about that, and I come off that train half lit, and there was Oily and Goose waiting on me. They had a jar of Bennies and a jar of White Lightning, took a handful of Bennies and chased it with White Lightning, blew me back against the wall, and I jumped up. Ah, the anticipation is fantastic. It hadn't even had a chance to work yet. I told them, you know, I got to quit hanging around with guys like you. I got to stay out of them honky-tonks. I got to stay away from them sick women. And they said, yeah. Yeah. We got in there and took off and started drinking. And we went to a dance. They had the country dance down on Wolf Creek where the men are men and the sheep are unscared. We'll go down to this dance. There's no cops down to this one, I'll guarantee you. I go in, the intermission, I rolled a Coke bottle down against the stage, and I said, I'm out. Let the meanest sucker in the house bring that back, and it looked like a stampede coming towards me. And I hit the first guy leading the charge because he was drunker than anybody. And then I ducked into the woman's restroom. And I may be sick, but I'm not stupid. As I went in the woman's restroom, there's a woman standing, a lady standing there, and I said, tell me when the fight's over. And I went in, hid in the stall. Pretty soon she come in and said, you can come out now, cowboy. The fight's over. I went outside. She's standing there. The band was playing. I'm a quick study. Hey, where you been, baby? I've been looking for you all my life. She said, where you been? I said, I just got out of the penitentiary. She said, well, I just got out of an unwed mother's home. I said, well, let's go together and give two people a break. So we had a little dance, and I found out she had a job, a car, a place to stay, money in the bank, a driver's license, none of which did I have. I said, take me home with you, and she did. A couple of months later, she said, are you going to go to work? I said, why? I don't like work. I'm a thief. I don't have much guilt either, except right when I get caught. So she said, I'm pregnant. Now, I don't remember having that conversation with her. I must have been crossing over the invisible line when we had that conversation. But I'm a do-right guy, you know. We got married. We got married in Amarillo, Texas. I got the preacher drunk, and I don't know what he finished the ceremony, but he signed the papers. Nobody could recognize his handwriting. His wife was in the kitchen peeling onions. Everybody's crying. We're all drunk. Everybody got drunk. We started out our new life. I found out the reason that lady was standing outside the door of that bathroom was because she finished the fight that I started. I'll tell you, I'm a mean, violent drunk. Violent, not temper tantrum, violent. I'll bite your ear off, I'll hit you with something, shoot you, whatever. I want to tell you something. That woman is tougher than me. Today. She's tougher than me. One time I went home drunk and I passed out on her 15 minutes into a two-hour conversation. They don't like that. Took a butcher knife and stabbed me all over my back. I had no t-shirt on and she stabbed me. I wasn't sharp. I don't keep no sharp knives in the house. Come on. Stabbed me all over my back and I came to her and I said, oh my God, something's wrong with my back. She said, oh, let me see. Yeah. She peeled my shirt off and said, oh, my God, you broke out of acne in the back. Let me get the rubbing alcohol. I'll help you. Perpetual revenge, baby, let me tell you. I used to get a fight with her, and I'd leave the house, and I'd go to some bar, and all my buddies would be there and say, what happened to you? I'd have all these things on my head and around. Where she hit me with her high heel shoes, you know them old high heel shoes, when the little rubber's gone, there's a wire in there, just a little round thing with a wire, and it, bam, it makes a little round circle with a dot in the middle of it. Bite marks all over me. I said, I fell in a hedge. No, you didn't fall in a hedge. There must have been a wild woman in that hedge. I ain't going to tell them. One time I finally said, I fought with my wife. And they said, I can't believe she did that. I said, come on, come on. About three guys said, come on, go home with me. We go over to the house. My front door wasn't, you know, it was off the hinges. You just leaned it up when you left. There was no, you just said, it wasn't because I was poor or nothing. It just broke the door and didn't put it back. And I'm standing at the door. My wife comes to the door with this knife. She's waving this knife around. And my guys, my buddies, they didn't want to go home and fight with their wife, come home to watch me fight with mine. said, get her, get her. I said, step to the head of the line, Ace. Come right on up here. Step right to the front of this licking log. I'll tell you, you get some scars on your noggin. You'll brad your helmet. Man, it was exciting. The neighbors would yell over at my house, shut that woman up, man. Screaming. Yeah, she wasn't loaded. She was just crazy, crazy. Used to stick that knife right in my face. And I carried guns. I had a 44 mag. And I, little barrel and big old hole in it. Big, I'd stick it right on her nose. Someone kill you if you don't shut up. It's like a screech out. Yeah, yeah. And she's got that knife in my stomach. She said, go ahead and shoot me. I said, I'm not going to shoot. If I shoot you, you're dead. She said, I know, but whenever your bullet hits me, the momentum will knock me back and the knife will go forward and you'll die too. They don't have to go to boot camp to do that. Sick women intuitively know how to do that and have no loss of life. It's just a rose by any other name. I swear to God, it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. Every day, and every night. It was just, it got to be that if we didn't beat the hell out of each other before we had sex, there was no foreplay. There's some relationships like that in here. I can. There's some sick women in here. I can feel them. They're always ready, baby. They're ready. Let's go. I don't need to pack. Yeah. Well, she had this little girl, and, Simone lived in my alcoholism for 12 and a half years, almost 13 years. And, it was unbelievable. I mean, the violence and it was terrorism, whatever you want to call it. It was alcoholism. But she survived, and she learned how to survive, just like I learned how to survive. And when people finally captured me, May of 1976, and put me in a detox, locked me up, and didn't give me no Valium and hard candy. Just detox, eat a banana, you need potassium. And I, crazy, detox for months. So Simone went to Al-Anon, Simone went to Alateen. And I'm so grateful that at that time it was available and that they both wanted to, because the people who 12-stepped me said, we watched him around here and he'll get sober, but he goes home to a crazy house. And he can't stay sober in a place where he drank. He can't stay sober in that crazy house where you're sick. Everybody's sick. He can hear the answer in AA meetings, but when he goes home to that sick, sick house, he can't stay sober. He's been trying to do it for 4 or 5 years. And thank God for the old timers that had the wisdom to know that they can tell the family of about themselves. And at that moment, my wife was ready to hear it. And when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And the detox I checked into was brand new. There were 39 people, men and women. And the doctor there was Dr. Paul Olliger, who's passed on now. But page 449 in the third edition of the big book is his story. And Dr. Paul was my doctor. And he read my book. And I stayed in that detox, and he didn't give me any slack. He took me to meetings. Him and Max would go pick my wife and daughter up. We'd go to speaker meetings, and they spoon-fed Alcoholics Anonymous. They spoon-fed that this is a family disease, and there can be family recovery. And I'm grateful that my wife had the strength, and that my daughter was young enough to be intimidated. The violence stopped, but there was still anger in the voices. But I told her, she come home one day and she's crying, said, Daddy, I don't want to go to Alateen. I don't want to go to AA either, baby, but I'm going and so are you, so we're done talking. Period. One time she got mad at me. I caught her in a lie and I grounded her. And there was things going on at school and she'd lied about it. And so she cried all night. Next morning, I wasn't sober very long. Next morning, I laid there and listened to her cry all night. After all the things I did to her, all the things in the house, oh, God, that was painful. I would get up and tell her, no, I'm sorry, I'll change my mind. I didn't. It's hard to be a disciplinarian from a distance. And I was home, and I said it, and I'm going to do it. We get in the car, and I'm taking her to school about 6 blocks. We pull up in front of the school. She said, Dad, you know they have drugs in there. She said, I can go in there and get some of that stuff, and I can tell these people I can't keep score at the basketball game tonight, and it'll be a lot easier. And I just, God help me, God help me, God help me. I reached over, and I opened that door, and I shoved the door. I said, Baby, I can't go in there with you. If you want to walk in there and get that stuff, let me tell you 1 minute, just 1 second here. Remember when you came and watched me, different times you saw me doing that stuff and how you hated me. And if you make a decision to go in there and pick up, it's on you, but you can't come home. You can't come home. We've got a sober home, and you can't come home. Get out of the car, go in there, may God be with you, but make your decision. And she opted out, slammed that door. I cried all the way home. I got home and told my wife, oh, my God, And, you know, she had a God because she didn't pick up. She didn't pick up. Never had. I don't know if she's an alcoholic or an addict. She's just never picked up. But I was strong in my conviction. I was strong in my conviction. Sobriety gave me the strength. The fact that I'm trying to stay sober 1 minute at a time, 1 hour at a time, trying to stay sober, trying to make my financial amends. I owed $250,000 to people. You can't write them a letter and send them $100 a month. One old guy said, you should get a hold of these people and tell them you'll send them $50 or $100 a month. I said, you don't know the people I owe the money to. You got no idea. It ain't Aetna Finance. And, you know what it says in the book? Common sense will be, uncommon sense, what have you. If a character defect got you in trouble, use a character defect to get out of it. Yeah. Is this a lie or not? No. Take action. I knew a guy had all inherited millions and millions of dollars, and I went to him, and I said, I'm sober. He said, I heard. We grew up together down in the park when he was a little kid. I jerked his pants down in front of the girls. Now he's got millions and millions, and I need money, and we're adults. And I said, I need a lot of money. How much? That's about $260,000. He threw me a checkbook and a pen. He said, start writing checks, pay those debts, and when you're done, call me. We'll set up a payment plan, and if you miss one payment, I'm going to kill you. Hey, if I don't pay him, they're going to kill me. I'll take his deal any day. He said, you remember that day in the park when you pulled my pants down? You know, resentments are good for some people. He said, I'm going to loan you this money, and if you miss one payment, I'm going to put a hit on you. You're done. Hey, I picked up the checkbook, paid those people, made those payments for 14 years. 14 years from that date. I paid him back, and the last payment was right before Christmas, and I had the money, but it was going to be a lean Christmas. And I called him up, 14 years. I'm ready for the last payment. And I said, just before Christmas, man, if I send you this payment. He said, what did I tell you about that payment? 14 years later, what did I tell you about that payment? He said, if I missed it, I'm dead. He said, send the money. I hung up, and I did it. We had a great Christmas. See? Great Christmas. There was a guy that farmed land back in the Texas area with my grandfather. And my grandfather died, and this guy started farming the land. And there was things that belonged to each one of them, and he consumed everything. And he had a water well, and he'd bought a pump to put it in. Grandpa drilled the well, and this guy put the pump. He called me up. He said, I'm going to drill a water well and need a pump. That's my pump in that water well. I need that water well to water my stuff. He said, I'm going to go over there and take that water, that pump out of that well. It's mine. My grandma told me, watch out. She's dead. But I remember. So that guy said, I'm going to go drill a water well. When it's done, I said, how much is it going to cost? He said, $12,000 for that pump. I said, you only paid five for it, and it's been over there for 5 years. He said, I'm going to take it out of that well, put it in mine. This guy had $1 million worth of wheat in his granary. See? He said, I'm going to drill that well. I called my sponsor. I said, that guy's going to drill a well. He's going to come over and get that thing. I'm going to go kill him. He said, no, you're not. Yeah, I am. I'm going to go kill him. I'm going to rent an airplane. I'm going to fly back here. I'm going to shoot him myself. He said, get a roll of toilet paper and write that guy's name down. Tell him it's time to go to a meeting. So I did. I called him and I said, it didn't help. He said, well, when you get home tonight, instead of going laying there and worrying about it, get a roll of toilet paper and write his Social Security on each one of them little squares. I said, I don't know. Make up one. The guy drilled a water well and there was no water. Ha! Huh! And on top, he called me. He said, I don't need the pump. I said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I have a lawyer drive up a thing. I want you to sign it. That pump's mine. Release any claims to that estate. He said, you don't trust me. I said, no. He did. A few months later, he had a stroke. He couldn't talk. Every Christmas, as long as he lived, I called him. And I'd put him on the phone. And I'd say, Jack, this is Keith Drum. Remember me? He go, I said, Merry Christmas. Click. I'm going to warn you, God's vengeance is much greater than anything human beings can cast upon their brethren. And it's more pleasurable because I didn't do it. God did. Yeah. That used to be really dark. I sobered up. I was crazy. I've been drinking and using for 22 years. You don't just sober up and all of a sudden, boom, it's gone. Somebody said, well, God will remove that desire. Well, I've been asking, and I still want to drink and use all the time. All the time. Did my steps, everything. Had a home group, washed the cups. I was crazy. Had more guns. If you'd have bumped into me, there'd have been a mushroom crowd. Crazy, just sober and crazy. Oh! I'm standing in a meeting. I'm the secretary of the meeting. I'm the treasurer of the meeting. Standing there on a Sunday morning, the spiritual Sunday morning meeting. I'm standing there with my little suit and tie on. I got down to see in our closures. Had a little hanky. Hi, how you doing? Hi, how you doing? Hi, hi, hi. And this guy walks up to me. Weirdest looking guy you ever seen. He wasn't short enough to be a midget, tall enough to be a man. Weird guy. He had a welder's hat pulled down over one ear. He had a pair of old cut-off shorts and a wife beater T-shirt and a pair of thongs, and he painted his feet black with shoe polish so it looked like he had socks on. So what did you do that for? He said, I don't like to do laundry. I said, how about your shorts? He said, oh, yeah, yeah. He was the treasurer of the meeting the night before. And he stood up at a treasurer's port and said, I stole all the money, and I'm not paying it back. And they said, you got to keep doing it until you learn how to do it. He just laughed, said, I'll be stealing some more. You can bet on that. And now he's standing next to me the next day at the spiritual Sunday morning meeting, standing next to me. I said, what do you want? He said, will you be my sponsor? Man, I really made God mad. I know I really made God mad. My sponsor's over in the corner. He'd get newcomers. They'd come in the door by the corner over there, and he'd say, keep going back out. You'll be like Keith. I was the group's best, worst example, man. I went over to my sponsor, see that guy? He said, yeah. I said, he just asked me to be his sponsor. He said, I know. I sent him over. Said, you go over and tell him you'll be his sponsor and do exactly what he said. Now, that don't make sense to me today. I've never told anybody to do that. But he told me to do that, and I didn't question it because when I questioned my sponsor, he went crazy and a little vein in his forehead pulsated, and he spit on me and yelled at me. I go back to this guy. And I said, my sponsor says, I got to be your sponsor. What do you want to do? And he said, you got a car out there. I did. I had an AA car. AA car. So we're long down. AA car. The license tag was AA car. My car, it was a Lincoln Continental Mark IV. Had a hood longer than a whore's dream. Wet. Had 104,000 miles on that baby. But it was my car. And he said, I want to go home in that car. Oh, man, you go out that door, I'll go out this door, I'll meet you at my car. He said, no, I'm going with you. Grandma, we took off, get in the car. He starts telling me this sick stuff. He says, how about this? Have you ever heard anything like this? Go, yeah. Wow. We pull up in front of his house. I said, you better do something about that. Well, I go get him the next day, gets in my car. How about this? He starts, man. He said, you ever do anything like that? I had to lie to him, man. It was so sick. I had to tell him a lot about my stuff. You can't let him one-up you. Next day, he said, I know that was a lie you told me last night because it's physically impossible to do what you said you did. I tried it. He showed up at my house, and he had an old big book with paper all stuck in it. And he said, I want to do the steps like you did. I'm trying to remember how I did them. I know I did them. I said, well, come on in the house. I know my life's unmanageable. I'm powerless. And must be crazy because you're here and I'm here. I need to do that third step again. Go in the kitchen, get down on her knees. He cuddle up underneath my arm all tight and everything. And had that tingling sensation and questioned my sexuality there for a minute. The cat walked by and looked funny at us, you know, and the wife's upstairs looking down. He jumped up on that table and threw a bunch of blank paper in front of me and said, I can't read or write. Threw a pencil over there. He said, I'll talk, you write. And he started talking, and then pretty soon he said, did you ever do anything like that? And a couple of things come up. I'd forgot to tell my sponsor when I did my fifth step. More will be revealed, and I knew God was in the room, and I knew he couldn't read or write, so I just put my stuff in his. What the heck, man? Hey! Hey, whatever it takes, get it on down to that dumpster. Yeah, he got through and jumped up and kissed me on the cheek, went out in the front yard and yelled real big and loud out in the front yard, I love you. Now the neighbors know. Yeah. Down the street he went, standing in my front yard. It's over a little while. Standing there, and it went from the head to the heart. Boom. It went from the head to the heart. Sitting at that table that day for 2 or 3 hours with this guy, listening to his stuff, took me out of me. It was absolutely impossible for me to sit there and listen to what he did and think I could do that in any way, shape, or form and get away with it. It literally started giving me a conscience. It's the greatest therapy there is. Literally started giving me a conscience. And the guy went on. He's still sober today. And that was the beginning. Little by little, tiny steps, trying to make the amends, trying to make it right, trying to do the right thing with my family. I knew I couldn't be violent anymore because I was a rager, and I would rage, and you could hand me a drink in the middle of a rage, and I'd drink it. I just couldn't rage anymore. And how did I get out of that rage and that anger? I wrote, pen to paper, and sometimes it looked like I wrote with a Hershey bar. Sometimes I'd give it to the people I was mad at. Here, this is what I think of you. They'd laugh like you laugh. They would laugh. They would literally laugh. I'm serious, man. I really hate you. And they just laughed. Said, you can be in the room. I don't even know you're there. That's how big a deal I was to them. You laugh. You got to laugh at that stuff. I did a sex inventory and gave it to an Eskimo. He shared with me. They do some weird stuff on that tundra up there, baby. Let me tell you. Get pretty sick up there on some of that stuff. Yeah. He laughed. There's only so many things you can do with a human body. You got to laugh at it. For God's sakes, it belongs to God anyway. And I went to work. Had to get a job. Man, I had to get a job. Job? What? My sponsor said, I was 3 years sober sitting in this den of thieves. Two cops in there, and we're playing hearts. And we got all kinds of stuff in that warehouse. Hot stuff, this stuff, that stuff. These two cops are on a take. They got their guns laying on the table. I'm 3 years sober. Just had my third birthday. I'm sitting in there. Because I was a collector. I was collecting. And I'm sitting in there playing hearts, and it dawns on me. I'm 3 years sober. I've been working my rear off to stay sober. They're not drinking in there. They're stealing, and they're thieves, crooks. And there's two cops there, and I thought, you know what? if this place gets raided, those two cops are going to kill us. I'm going to die first. I mean, just bam, that went through my mind. I thought, wow. And I said, excuse me, I've got to go to the bathroom. I got up and I walked out of there and never went back. And my two friends were in there, both died within 60 days. See? Now you can say, God told you to get up and leave. I had a moment of truth. You do that every once in a while. It looks like an old hallucination. Because it's not familiar. A moment of truth for a guy like me is not familiar at all. See? And things like that happen. I turned and something happened. I didn't go chase everybody down and try to make amends. I was there, prepared to make the amends. And when it was ready, we met and the amends were made, or not. See? Most of the people that I owed money to wanted their money. Amazing. I want my money. Okay. I did not have an overwhelming good feeling about giving them their money back. I worked to steal that. But it was their money. It was their money, and I paid them back. You can't go BK on debts like I had. I would like to go down and file a bankruptcy thing and tell these people, I'm bankrupt. They say, yeah, you are. You're dead, too. I'm going to tell you something. It took 14 years. And during that period of time, at 9 years sober, 9 years sober, trucking along. I watched the birthdays. And, you know, there's big gaps in there, but I... 3 years sober, man, I lit up again. I'm doing this stuff. I'm setting up the chairs, washing. I'm just insanely sober, 3 years sober. 5 years sober, my fifth birthday, 360 people came to my backyard. I'd moved into a big place at a pool. I was rock and roll, had a Rolls Royce in the garage, a Mercedes, a couple of new Harleys. My wife was there, my daughter was there. We had several foot-long sandwiches, and I took an electric knife and cut them and portioned myself. It was every kind of human being you can imagine in the backyard. 360 people all came. May, my fifth birthday. July the 4th, I had alienated myself from every one of them. I don't need them. I don't need them. I didn't get a written invitation to their 4th of July party. I alienated. That's how quickly I, sober, 5 years sober, alienate myself from every. I was going to meetings. Different meetings where I didn't know anybody. It's okay. It's in a meeting. My wife came over and sat down on my lap and said, baby, this is just like it was when you were drunk. What have you done? I said, I don't need them. I don't need them. A bunch of plastic people acting like they can dance and have fun. They're plastic. They're angry and hate just like me. No. Yes. I walked through it. A wall of fear, I walked through it. I went to those people and I said, I need you. I need a commitment. I need a commitment. All the time I'm paying this money back, doing that, working, doing all, I'm just busy doing all this stuff. 5 years sober, 6, 7 years sober. That's when the sixth and seventh step start coming into your life. And when you skip through 6 and 7, when you was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years sober, when you're 6 and 7 years sober, then you're going to find out what your character defects are because they're pulsating in your life daily. Wah, 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 wah. Yeah. Yeah. And you're smiling in meetings. I don't have a problem. I'm happy as a dove. Yeah. I had it going on everywhere. It became apparent to me that I was going to have to make amends for the way I was making amends. Oh. I didn't stop. 9 and a half years sober, the FBI, the IRS, all of those guys that I've been on their crosshairs for years, but I had a little spell, blank spot there for 5 years. All of a sudden, there they are at my front door. All the black suits and the black cars and out in my front yard, and my new neighbors and everybody, and they dragged me out in the front yard, and my wife out in the front yard, and my daughter out in the front yard, put us on the grass, face down, guns to our head. They're in there pulling everything out of my house. It was a big show, man. They must have spent, I don't know, $50,000 on that raid, man. They drug everything out, went through everything, found nothing. But they had pictures of me with some people in organized crime. I've been in organized crime for over 20 years. I didn't bring it into AA meetings. I didn't talk about it. It was a different life. See, it's one thing to tell a lie. It's another thing to live a lie. It's one thing to tell a lie, but it's another thing to live a lie. And I was living a lie, and I can't live a lie and stay sober. And I was living two different lifestyles. Organized crime is a way of life. People say, AA is a way of life. Let me tell you, where I come from is a way of life. And you don't get out of that. They're happy I'm sober. They're tickled to death because I have certain abilities that I do much better sober. But when the cops got all that stuff, they had pictures. I had been associating with these people because I owed them money. I was paying them back. Here they are, got me. Served me with a federal grand jury. You go down to the federal building. Had to get a lawyer, dig up some of that cash, get a lawyer, and go down there and go through that. It took 45 days. And I walked through it. They didn't have nothing on me. It wasn't that big of a deal. But what they wanted to do, and they read the big book. The FBI guys and their little DEA guys, they read the big book. And they know that part where we are sniveling Denises and we're cowards. That FBI guy said, I'm going to make you drink. Oh, damn, thanks for the encouragement. You just made me three times stronger. I didn't say nothing. But they wanted to treat me like a snitch. And I went first out of four guys, and they wanted to treat me like I'd dropped a dime on these people. And I went in there and said my deal, and my old sponsor said, don't justify your behavior at the expense of someone else. For the first time in your life, don't justify your behavior at the expense of someone else. And don't let them rob you of your dignity. And I walked through that, and I didn't drop a dime on nobody. And when I walked out there, these people were sitting there, and I gave them the high sign because I didn't do nothing, neither did the other people. And I walked out of that thing, and I met with these people, and I said, I'm done. If I drink, we're all in trouble. And I walked out of there. 9 years sober. Walked out of there with dignity. I crawled before no one. I answered to my God, and God gave me the strength to walk through that. And I did. And I paid my way. And I paid my debts. And today, years later, that element of people on this faith, they respect me. I don't hang around with them. I know who they are. They know me. I see them here and there. But they respect me. If I'm going to have respect from you and get integrity and try to walk straight path, then I need to do it over here. And God gave me an opportunity to do that in that other part of my life. And I could put that part of my life aside and walk away. They told me the way to quit is that you never, ever go back. You never, ever go back. And they honored my decision. And I walked out of there and I had to get a job. I'd lost everything. It cost a lot of money for those lawyers. My wife and daughter, the fear set in them. They didn't know. I was looking at 5 years in the penitentiary sober. I didn't sit in meetings and whine and snivel, oh, I'm about to go to prison. You know why? Because I went to some old timers and I said, yeah, I'm about to go to prison. They said, you know, there's probably somebody in prison that needs you to 12-step them. Then you go, slick. You get down there and go to that prison. I'm going on a panel. I don't whine or snivel. I did it. God gave me the strength to do that. Every day I stayed clean and sober. I put something together. Every hour, every minute, I put something together. I molded something. And at night I'd go to bed and I'd say, God, thank you for another sober day. Next morning, I wake up and say, God, you better take care of me. I'm going to be real busy. Bam, I'm gone. and I got strength. I got spiritual muscles. All of my the bad things that's happened in my life were so that I can do something that makes me stronger. When you're going through it, it doesn't seem like it's fair. It doesn't seem like this is right or wrong, but I'm not a victim. I volunteered for all that crap I got in. And I stood up. I stood up. And I did things in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was busy. Went to a lot of groups. Joined different groups. I have a home group. I've had the same home group. My home group's Dog on the Roof. It's 48 years old. I didn't start it. The old guy that did was the first guy that 12-stepped me. And it's still my home group. It isn't the best meeting in the world, but it's my home group. Hey, and I'm loyal to it. I'm faithful to them. Loyalty. Loyalty. People say, oh, I'm clean and sober. I can do that. What about loyalty? When you say ask somebody to be your sponsor. You're new. You go up and say, okay, will you be my sponsor? What if they said to you, the only requirement for me to sponsor you is for you to be loyal to me. Loyalty. Something that we alcoholics and addicts know nothing about. Nothing. I was loyal to nothing or nobody. No oath. No pledge. I got a sponsor, and I was loyal to my sponsor. He didn't ask me to do anything that he hadn't done. He gave me direction. He told me to go home and be nice. Be nice to her and say thank you and clean up that drunken house. Get the doors back on. Get it painted four different colors. Had old cars out there. I started cleaning up that house. And my daughter decided she wanted to be a model, and I was scared to death. She brought these papers. They wanted me to sign papers so she could go all over the world and model, and I could just see her on some chic yacht, and they're using her and all this stuff. So her and her mom said, give me those papers. And they went in the car and drove around the block, and when they got back, my name was signed on there. And she went, and she come back with portfolio, beautiful pictures. She had experiences. And I'm going to tell you something. Running around all over the world, 16, 17 years old, in the program, I mean, she has a God. There's no spot where God is not. And all the things that she had to use to survive in my house with a drunken, raging father, those survival tools she used to survive in Japan when them little Japanese guys reading their little screw books were making fun of, and she took her shoe off and go, bam! She called and told her mama, thanks, Mom. I just hit a guy with the heel of my hoot shoe. She went all the way to a NATO base over there. They had to go 3 hours on a train to a NATO base to go to Al-Anon meeting. She had two of her newcomers, and they were Italian. They didn't speak English. Simone speaks English and Italian. They're on a train, and they're going home, and three or four Marines from California, Pendleton Marines, get on the train. They start smarting off in English because they thought these girls couldn't speak English. And they were smarting off about these girls and making fun of them and stuff. Simone stood up and said, listen, you're a Marine. You're supposed to be respectful. I'm from America. You're from America. Shape up. You embarrass me. They go, oh, we've been caught. She used those things that she used to survive. She didn't throw me away. She didn't hate me forever. It took time. It takes time. It took time for the slow growth. But we came together. We're a family come back together. My dad was a lawyer, a raging, crooked, drunken lawyer. But I kept him on retainer for 30 years. I needed a lawyer. He drunk. Finally called me up and said, on my birthday, August the 27th, called me up and said, son, I want to give you a birthday present. He can never remember my birthday. He said, I'm sober. I'm in a drying out joint, and I think I've got it. He never forgot my birthday after that because it was his sobriety date. Yeah. He died 89 years old, 27 years sober. Yeah. He didn't sober up till he's 62, something like that. He was a lawyer. He was too smart to sober up, you know. But he sobered up. He brought a family back together. We came back together. came back together. I want to tell you a quick story, and then I'm done. There was a mother and father and a little girl, and they lived in some country. They were beautiful people and loved each other. There wasn't a flaw at all. They didn't have much money. But they lived in a town, maybe something like this, a port. I noticed that as the land protruded out, there's a port place. In this little town they lived in, there was like an ocean liner, like a cruise ship would come in every so often. And this family would watch the people get on this cruise ship, and they'd watch it sail away. And they had a dream. They worked very hard, and they had a dream that they'd get enough money to buy a ticket on this great ocean liner. Came the day, they had their money. They packed their stuff, they were going to take the cruise. They go down, and they have their ticket. They get on, they get in their little room, and the porthole's there, and they're looking out, and their dream's coming true. Mom and Papa and the little girl all happy, 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 and a great cruise ship sails away, and they'd packed all their stuff. And for 3 or 4 days, they stayed in that room, and they packed some cheese and crackers. And they would eat that cheese and crackers. They're so grateful to be on the cruise ship. And they stayed in that room. And the little girl said, "Daddy, I'm hungry. I need something to eat. I want to go." And he said, "Well, here's 50 cents. Go up to the galley and get you some ice cream." The little girl left, and she was gone a long time. The mother and father were worried. They had no idea where she could be. Pretty soon there was a knock on the door, and they opened the door, and there she stood. And she was all smiles and happy. "Where have you been? We worried sick." He said, "Oh, Daddy, I went up to the galley, and I had steak, potatoes, and I had ice cream and pie. The food's free. It comes with the ticket." Now, that's not a story about love. They had much love. It's a story about ignorance and teachers. Ignorance and teachers. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was ignorant. Alcohol had numbed me to the point that I didn't know the difference between right or wrong, true or false, or anything. I was totally ignorant. Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps have restored me to sanity to the point that I know I'm sober. I know how much I'm grateful for my sobriety. There's people who come to Alcoholics Anonymous and they get sober and they're satisfied with cheese and crackers. They're satisfied with cheese and crackers. See? I didn't come here for cheese and crackers, Slick. I come here for the whole enchilada. I stood over at his house and said, "Steak and potatoes, corn on the cob." Yeah! Pay attention to your teachers. Come on up. Join the society. Join sobriety. Enjoy love and peace and happiness. That's what God is. God is not evil and black and dark and punishment. God is love. God is kindness. Kindness. Compassion. Consideration. We don't know anything about that, but there's people here, people sitting in this room who do. Seek them out if you're new, I beg of you, and grasp a little piece of life. Don't settle for cheese and crackers. You don't have to at all. It's a whole new way of living, and it's fantastic. God bless, and thank you.